this breakout group, breakout session. We've got some serious competition from the other one. So, please, we've got a decent turnout here for this particular one. The notes for the chairs include that we have to make a point about the fact that this is going to be recorded and be made public, at least to a select few of people who are signed up. Or is there anything else I should say about that, Norman? We're not being live streamed or anything at the moment.
It's an audio recording as well.
So the camera's just to point the microphone, is it?
Yeah, we're just recording the sound. Just we had to go with the camera option, so there was a normal mic.
Great, thank you. Okay, well, here we are. We've listened to two groups of people, the award leaders panel and the business and employment representatives. And I think we've probably picked up quite clearly the passion and the professional commitment sincerity of all those involved, and certainly sparked a lot of reflection and potentially a very long discussion we didn't have time for at the end of each of those sessions. But that's what this is all about. In the award leaders panel, I thought we got a good idea of the spectrum of co-curricular and extracurricular perspectives there. Francine's extracurricular, clearly at end. Vicky's co and extracurricular system. And Terry's probably so far at the other end, so co-curricular that I must ask him if we can refer to it as intracurricular, because it was so thoroughly assimilated as part of the mission and practice of John Moores. We've also identified a number of serious questions or feelings in people's minds, things to do with the relationship between the academic world and business and the institutions representing those two fields and the sort of relationships that might be developing or might need to develop. We've enjoyed that kind of detail that we've been given from our panellists, each according to their own contexts in business or in their university. From the graduate recruiter panel, I thought we had some interesting reference to a range of qualities and skills and attributes. We could call them dispositions, fit in with our keynote, to cover a whole range of those things. And I was thinking about the place of those, whether they're driven by business or by the academic world, and actually whether it necessarily mattered that much if they were going to be useful attributes and dispositions for a person to have. Things like being able to understand oneself, to be able to relate in a positive way to other people, to be aware of other people, to be able to communicate, to plan, to have enough confidence to be effective, to understand things and systems and others. And I particularly latched on to the reference to mutual agenda, mutual trust, and mutual language there from Carl. And maybe that's a zone that we might want to have a think about as we go through. But anyway, the overall topic for this breakout discussion is quality and standards, challenges and issues raised by award leaders. And I suppose we might think from here, how can we be confident about having whatever quality, whatever standards and comparisons between different awards? How can we make sense of those things? It's like, not just apples and pears. Apples, pears, oranges, bananas, and a lot of them. So I suppose we come down to thinking about what are the universals that we could agree without losing the value of the differences as well. We don't want everything to become homogeneous. We want to value the complexity and the diversity and all of those things as well. But how can we do that whilst at the same time being sure that we have some agreed systems for ensuring that they're is quality and that there are standards that we're all happy with, and we're happy that somehow, formally, less formally, but somehow they are being judged, they are being gauged, and we do trust them. We could even go into the whole area of what about values, not just skills, intelligence and personal qualities, but what about the beliefs and the important moral and ethical positions that people have. You know, it would be very interesting to explore things like honesty, fairness, integrity, bankers' bonuses or not. You know, how important are they in selecting the right people according to the right criteria to do the right things that they do when they leave university? So all sorts of issues there. If we can try and look at challenges and issues relating to quality and standards, who would like to kick us off? We have an award leader here. I'm sure you'll be happy to represent your own standpoint and possibly others.
Yeah. How many? Let's just see how many people.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Schemes is several. Yeah, before. Just how many people are actually leading, have oversight of the schemes? It's about 4 or 5 people. Yeah.
Terry, I'm sorry, I missed you. I'm sorry, I missed you as well, Vicky. You look slightly different sitting down.
More relaxed.
What about intracurricular? I mean, is that oversimplifying it or making it seem too much part of the academic curriculum?
No, I don't think so. I did not use that term. It's the first time I've had someone refer to approaches intracurricular. Ray and I were talking over coffee, and our approach, the world of work approach, seems to me, as that one of my slides showed, it's firmly rooted within the university modular framework, within subject programs of study, within modules and validation processes and the QA ability of that. So the work-related learning and the reflection on the gaining of evidence of certain graduate skills, and I mentioned 8. Would you like to know what the 8 are?
Yeah.
Okay, just if you go to our website, the 8 are there, and the criteria for unpacking the 8 are also there on the WOW/students website as well. But they are, and they'll be completely consistent with everything you know and what other people are doing, I'm sure. But analysing and problem solving is one. Teamworking, interpersonal skills is another. Verbal communication, written communication, numerical reasoning, personal planning and organising. Initiative, and ICT, IT skills. I could have chosen 18, 28, I suspect, but this is before I arrived. 8 were chosen using some of the work from ESAC and others.
Yes,
sir.
Well,
I was just sort of thinking that I think once we get that terminology right, it helps us with the way that perhaps certain things need to be assessed. I mean, we do have work which is embedded in the curriculum. We do have work which is co-curricular, free-ranging modules and things like that. And then we have extracurricular. And they are different things, and therefore the assessment strategies for the three need to be different. And I think the models that were shown this morning illustrated that very well. And I think that, you know, as Vic and I were talking, I think the nature of the university John Moores, you know, the nature of the university is determining how these things are growing organically within different universities. I mean, and I would say in our university, we do all three. We have everything embedded in the curriculum, all modules through with validation. We have free-ranging modules. You can take Languages for All, you can take Citizenship, you can take whatever degree you do, and then we have extracurricular. And they necessarily will be assessed and moderated differently because of the nature of the activity itself. And I would say, certainly in our university, values are very much in there because our circle is human rights, and human rights and citizenship fundamentally underpins everything the university does. And so everything is seen as being, you know, value-laden and value-interpreted. So just an observation, but I think we are dealing with, we can't talk, you know, we need to separate the apples from the pears and then talk about how we're going to assess those differences.
Thank you.
I think I can say that's lovely, but I just wonder to what extent universities in developing these programs, these opportunities, are feeling impelled themselves to subject all these offerings to a rigorous QA approach. And if there's any hint of that, it would be rather ironic, because universities have been saying for the last 10 years or more how ghastly QA is. And here they are autonomously generating their own new experiences and programs for students, and yet they may be unduly subjecting to, dare I say, possibly, inappropriate, undue bureaucratic processes of audit that are actually injurious to the more humanitarian and more student-oriented hopes that are vested in some of these programs. I just register that as a line of thought, really, no more.
That's where that in mind.
Yeah, I'd just like to explore with the WOW programme the extent to which, across the range of different programmes you have, there are consistent standards for those sort of characteristics. So does it mean the same thing in, I don't know, in psychology as it does in nursing, as it does in other areas of the university, to put it short in those terms?
Well, on paper it does.
So are there
in reality, criteria? Yes, there are. And those are the criteria that are on the website. You can have this, I think it's 41 criteria against the 8 graduate skills, so things that are looked for where evidence is required. But of course, subject by subject, as these things evolve, certain parts of the university have said this really isn't quite so relevant, this is actually quite difficult for us in fine arts to really deal properly with this numerical reasoning, kind of graduate scale, etc., etc. So we've introduced things like, you know, an optional diagnostic numerical reasoning test that students can access if they want to, if they feel that that's kind of important. And it's all voluntary. So the acquisition of a graduate skills statement, piece of paper at the end of the process, is completely voluntary. But there are targets within the organisation. And each dean is a target from the VC. This has to be worked towards. I think one of the interesting things I want to try and articulate is most, if not all, universities will say, and have said for years in my view, that simply by doing philosophy here at University X, you will come out with all of these things, won't you? It's kind of just all implicit. It just happens, doesn't it? Well, the evidence from the employer side is that that isn't the case. They're very clearly saying that is not the case. So our degree is enough. So we can just kind of leave it implicitly. It just happens. It doesn't have to be formal and picked out and identified and certified. It's just there. But they would disagree, and they do disagree. They did this morning, I think. They did brilliantly well. So one thing our university is trying to do, and it's just our approach, it's just the way that this university is trying to do it, at one end of the continuum, is to say, well, we would also probably make that claim that our graduates, having done those subjects, are employable. And there's a lot of, you know, implicit lifelong learning and disposition and attributes and skills being developed along the way. But just to make that more explicit, we've actually asked our academics to map every one of their programs against these 8 and to identify where these things are taught, practiced, and where a student is given feedback. So that if an LJMU student theoretically is being considered for a post and is sat before a panel, and the panel are asking about evidence of your capabilities, attributes, skills, graduate skills, What defines you as a graduate? What is graduateness? Why should we consider you over a non-graduate or over other graduate competitors? Our graduate, in theory, will be able to say, who's gone through that process, will be able to say. Well, I think I've analysed in rather more depth where within my programme I've developed at least these eight. There are others, there are values, but I can at least tell you something a little more about the eight. And through this transcript or through my own reflection and what I'm going to tell you now, I can give you more detail about that. So it's kind of, it's less flimsy, I guess, less inherent, just less assumptive. If you can imagine a graduate just making a plea, like, I've been to a good university, but a well-regarded degree, can't you just assume I've got all these? Well, no, we can't. So that's part of what's driving our approach, and we're very early days.
Sorry. It's very interesting what you're saying. The question that's going to my mind when you're saying that, you mentioned that mapping where the skills are being taught in practice, the students being given feedback, but you did say assessed. Which is fine in my book. But I'm just trying to relate that to this question that we're having about standards and QA and so on. And I'd perhaps like to relate it to an earlier comment that one of the employers made about, what is the purpose of this award? Is it about helping students to articulate, which, maybe that's enough? Or do we need this objective standard? And in that case, how are we going to measure it? Because I think that's always been the question of skills, is it appropriate? And how do you actually make these objective judgments?
I'm now in the graduate development centre as employee engagement manager for Terry's team for a while, but I was an academic and we didn't like graduate skills and we didn't like the fact that we had to map all our modules, and then as a curriculum leader I had to map all the degrees and make sure they were covered throughout. I'd done it in my previous job in a different place. So I understood it more than my academic colleagues had only always been in university. There's two things going on here that I think perhaps haven't quite differentiated. The graduate skills certificate is not the WOW certificate. It's completely and utterly separate. We originally, when it came out before Terry's time, thought they were going to be combined. They weren't, they were separated out. And what we've sort of said now is we've got the academics give feedback, so we know whether taught, practiced, assessed, as in feedback. And then the students have to collect all that feedback and it's assessed by an independent person. So the skills support officers are people we had invented. And they sit down with the student's portfolio from all their work. And they do the assessment because, as academics, we strongly said, I haven't got the time, I'm a subject specialist, and I haven't got the wherewithal to do this in the sense of the depth that you want me to do this in. So the graduate skills certificate, if the students claim it, they have to gather the evidence together, put it in the portfolio and give it to the skills support officer. The WOW certificate is different, it's another element, it's a last step, a further element. The thing that we then went through a quite painful period where we were all going and doing all this feedback, and your mapping was really had to be good because you didn't want everyone doing feedback on one graduate skill and 90% of them not being fed back on. So the mapping was crucial and took up a lot of time with my management role. But then one of our senior managers turned up and said, right, we now know we've got a bedrock in place. We can actually make our claims to the employer knowing it's there. And everyone just relaxed. And we remap them every year. If you remap a module, if you validate, you change modules, then you remap the graduate skills. But you know they're there, and you know the students have got the opportunity to collect the evidence. So then the actual onerous side of it came off the academics.
Boy, do you mind waiting to just come back on this particular
one?
It sounds amazing, believe me, what you're doing and the way in which it's structured, and obviously there's the serious funding put in there to get it embedded in a way. And obviously it adheres in some way to QAA guidelines, and that's the route you've chosen to go down. It's difficult to say, in some ways I'm actually pleased that I'm outside of QAA, because I think that imposing that kind of framework on it would actually kill a lot of the richness of things that we get from students. And like you, we do have a similar list of graduate skills. There's about 12 Sheffield graduate
concepts, dispositions, whatever, which we've distilled down to about six, and they're not very dissimilar to yours. Mm. And what they have to do is provide an example from their activities of having got that particular skill. But the rest of it is a set of reflective questions where they have to choose three questions relating to career development, self-awareness and personal developments and so on. And that really is the bit that I enjoy reading most of all.
That's the wow.
That's your wow. So we've probably got two bits, but ours is all incorporated into one. But it is so time consuming. You know, it takes a good 45 minutes to read each one of these portfolios, and going through my mind as I'm reading them is, am I doing this person justice? Is this comparable with everybody else's? Because as Rob will know, the difference between a pass and a top class pass is so wide that, you know, I suffer agonies of thinking, shall we let this person through? And I just feel as if there is no official, I don't know what to call it, is it official backup, is it qualified backup, is it?
Well, that's why a wow certificate goes before an employer. But the statement they produce goes before an employer, which is completely not separate. The students are voting with their feet. They're not doing the graduate statement. And you go into some departments and they just say, yeah, it's there. If they want it, they can come and get it, but no one's. And they've turned their skills support officers into work-related learning people to meet the needs of the wow curriculum. The wow, you know, the fact that we've got a mandate to get more employees involved. So they're actually, the students are voting and the resources are following the student wishes, because the students aren't putting in the portfolios. They're not willing, that they're choosing to come and do the wow certificate, which is signed off by the employer.
Can we let Roy come in on this one?
Yeah, it's not unrelated. I mean, I heard a few things in that last session that made me blink and think. Part of me thinks that the important thing about what we're doing is the student experience, is not the certificate, not the award, not the modules, but actually the student experience. And we're using the modules as a vehicle for, I don't know, is it an incentivization thing? Is it we're saying, if you do this, then we'll give you some credits? That I think there are risks associated with that. We heard an employer say, I filter out, I use the degree classification as a filter out. I think if we focus over much on awards and certificates, then we provide employers with another way of filtering out. And it actually is kind of inducing a sort of laziness almost on their part. We can eliminate, they haven't got an award certificate, they haven't got a university award. Let's not look at that person. Why didn't they do it? If, on the other hand, what we're saying to students is, by going through this process, you will be able to cope with the unexpected. So, for instance, we can't predict what a selection panel or an assessment centre will ask of a particular student. But by giving them the confidence to think on their feet and be able to, through the reflections that we're talking about in WOW and your work, that reflective process, to be able to do that on the spot and actually articulate their skills, their attributes. That seems to me to be much more important than actually awarding a certificate. So to some extent, I'm almost talking myself out of focus on the certificate, on the award, on the module, and going back to thinking, okay, let's focus on the process and finding some way of embedding the process into the student experience. And that is my real challenge, because unless there's a reason for doing it, nobody's going to do it. And I think that there's a real vicious circle there, which I'm struggling with at the moment.
During the induction process, you know, in order to get the numbers up, I'm pressured to make sure that I give value for money, that I justify why I'm getting this money. And it's about numbers, and they want as many people to go through this award as possible. But they have a compulsory induction session, and during that induction session, I absolutely lay it on the line that this is not about the certificate. But in order to get students to buy into, which is essentially an elective program, you have to have some way of dragging them in. Mm-hmm. And one of the most effective ways is A something. I mean, it's handed out to the graduating center, and it goes on the transcripts and so on. That really isn't what it's about. What we're looking at, as you mentioned, is the process. Mm-hmm. And I emphasize the process as being part of the award, and that, you know, these awards, that having gone through the process, it's about being able to present themselves as as actually being able to fill in a job application form without making spelling mistakes, getting an email address right. So there are those sorts of basic things, but the process is about the journey travelled, you know, and what they're able to use from the process rather than the actual certificate. The certificate is really just a selling point. It's just a way of getting students to buy into it, that's all. And also for the university to take it seriously, because, you know, we have to have, we have to raise the profile of the award within the university.
Well, it gives us a measurable outcome, doesn't it? And that's very, universities like measurable outcomes. So by having 500 people going and getting your award, that looks good. Yeah. Exactly. That concerns me. I understand entirely the incentive value. What worries me is that the incentive becomes the end in itself, and rather as students, and many students, not all students, are very instrumental about, I need a 2-1. I want my 2-1 to get a job, and and education is, it may not be characteristic of all students, but certainly a lot of our students are very, very motivated by getting a qualification as a means to get into the labour market. And that's what we sell our degrees on, actually. We're honest about that when we say that. We're quite upfront about it. But that engenders a kind of instrumental approach, and I just worry that actually we're simply reinforcing all of that and actually detracting from the idea of the journey, and that students will go through it almost like a sort of tick box to get there.
But we can't look at the
process.
Then Ron.
Well, I just want to echo exactly what you said about the challenges about the embedding process, and absolutely, completely agree with you on that. That's what I'm doing. But equally, I can also see your point, because it's the sort of difficulty between these two sides of it, that in order for the institution to take it seriously, and you need that status and you need that visibility, and those are the discussions that we're having here as well, and that students need to be recognised for what they've done, and how do you put the infrastructure in place for that to come about. So you've got that conundrum, and I don't really know what the answer is. I do completely agree with what you're saying, that the importance and the challenge is embedding the process. Again, I hope I'll answer that.
Would you mind if I just came out quickly on it? Because it's just in mind. All of our experience of the employers we're working with, and it contradicts what was said this morning, and I know all of the panel apart from the Surrey Chamber quite well, is that our employer verified certificate is in part heavily driven by the employers who are verifying it. We want these people to go through this process and have this piece of paper. The currency of the piece of paper going forward remains to be seen, you know, how powerful that becomes. And one way in which we're trying to make a difference is to actually distance the university from the certificate, because the reverse of it carries the logos of major international brands. So in fact, this is, you know, if you want to take issue with the certificate as an interviewer, you need to take issue with the brands who are supporting this person, because it's them that have kind of validated the whole thing. Just slightly different, but I completely agree with the process there. We see lots of evidence of the power of the process over the end product, so it is a dilemma.
I just wanted to sort of bring in the additional dimensions, because we're talking about the sorts of numbers that are going through this process. Being at a university where widely participation is one of our great thrusts, we pride ourselves in our 52% of first generation, etc. Many of our students unsupported people with children, they are minority groups, they are absolutely, new entrants to higher education. And they don't tend to be the people who are doing the awards. They're not the hallmates, because they have to go home and look after small children. They're not doing the elective programmes, because God knows they can't get to work, can't get to university long enough to take their proper degree. Now, I worry about them. If we're a bit like Terry was saying at sort of coffee time, sort of shining out the Rolls Royce, we do have some very, very capable students. And it's those very, very capable students who tend to do this award. And what we're doing is we're giving them further uplift. And a kind of sort of socialist human rights person in me is saying, is this good? this is that's the right thing to do. And I know it's open to everybody, but in real terms, it's not open to everyone. If you're 18 and you've got two younger sisters at home that you've got to go back and look after, or if you have to work all hours of game to stay at university because nobody is supporting you, or you're an asylum seeker or refugee, or you're, you know, da-da-da-da, none of these do our award. And I just want to sort of throw that in as a little tension. What I would say is that they're learning all kinds of life skills in other ways, but they don't have time for this fluffy reflection business and filling in our reflective log. And I just have a slight concern about that.
Yes. Ron, I know you had your pen up a while ago.
My mind goes back to the video we saw yesterday, a wonderful video about students in Uganda. And then we had students last night who came around with a hat, and many of most of us made a contribution. Why were we doing that, and what did we see in that video? Why were the students doing that? Why were they stretching themselves, going into unknown situations? They weren't doing it for an award. What are we doing when we're setting up these bureaucratic structures? Are we going to be encouraging that to come into the endeavour? Or are we going to be blocking it off?
Okay, we've got a few officers. Okay.
I mean, in a sense, they might be possible. And I was going to make just a point on that, though. The sense of how do we make schemes genuinely inclusive? And meaningful to an increasingly diverse student population, I think it's really important. And it's certainly something that those institutions that are in the HEAR pilot have put as their number one priority. That's just a piece of information. I think the other thing is just thinking about process and product, and Francine's heard me talk about this and other people probably before, is rather than think about the student as producing a portfolio that they give to us for assessment, it would be really, I think it's important to think about the student as an assessor themselves on their own portfolio. And therefore, one of the things I'm quite keen to do is in a sense, almost not to read the portfolio, but to read the student's commentary on the portfolio, which says how they see it. And that, in that context, the job can become a bit more manageable. But the other thing that can happen is that actually the process of doing it can explicitly serve a genuinely significant learning opportunity for the student rather than a kind of stamp collecting activity. So that even if they go into it for that, with that kind of mindset, maybe the process of them in assessment actually shifts the paradigm a little bit and they come to appreciate the full meanness of it rather than the full certificateness of it.
Thank you.
In Dundisa, we've got more of an approach like yourself, and we try to make sure that it's open to everybody, because again, kind of similar to your university, we've got a lot of local students who are coming along, a lot of students who are first generation, so we're trying to make sure that we're not disenfranchising them sort of under the set module that we do. So if you work in Tesco Stack and Shelves, or if you're looking after your family, then you're able to put these things down, and they're actually weighted quite well because we've got a list of skills that people adhere to, and then they find themselves that they've gotten better. But it kind of strikes me that we're in a bit of a quandary just now, because in order for me to get the buy-in from academics, which I need because I don't have a big budget to go out and spend on promoting this, so I need academics to be talking to people, and therefore for them to be happy with it, it needs to be QA. But in order for it to fit people who are coming from outside, that I can't go and apply QA things to being a shelf stacker at Tesco for 3 years and then have managed to work your way up to the manager of the shift and now working 40 hours a week on top of your degree. I'm not able to acquiesce those two things, which is really where the difficulty comes in. I mean, we can't quality assure these things, but I'm very keen to resist the fact that we need buy-in from academics, and that's the difficult part. And I'm kind of interested in the idea that it is about the journey, because it has to be said, the journey my degree, which wasn't that long ago, but I graduated 2 years ago, I didn't learn as much as I did working security in the student union and working for the student union as an elected representative. I certainly know more about that, and that's why I was going to jump in the university. So I think it's about, we need to recognise everything, but we also need to find a way to get people going into this.
It relates to that first question on the blue sheet. We've got some
input here, and over to Norman.
The new courses, I imagine, will have within them, because they'll be benchmarking against subject benchmarks and other things, they will have statements about their ability to develop communication skills in students, develop their students' research and evaluation skills. Yet students can't take these skills through to interviews and applications. They can't take the research and evaluation into research and companies and jobs and what they need to do. They can't take the communication skills into writing CVs and effective applications. Why is that? Where in our education system, in what we do, are we failing our students? There is something here about the skills and the development and the transferability of those skills where we are failing our students, because they can't take it into there, they can't take it into industry. How can we change the education system so we can actually deliver these skills to the students? Because I think we are failing at the moment. And I think the Skills Award is just a, it's just a something, it's the outcome that we're trying to address. It's not addressing the core issue. The core issue somewhere is in the curriculum and the way in which we engage students in the curriculum and develop in them the ability to understand the skills they have and the ability to transfer them to different contexts.
I'm a simple geologist, so I have to have a picture. And I have to have a picture that sort of connects a number of variables to make sense. So let me just try this out. I can see sort of three models where sort of institutional vision, or vision, shall we say, comes together with resources, comes together with the design of a system and the design of a quality system as part of that educational system. So first of all, if you've got an institutional vision where these sorts of things are integral to their notion of what being a graduate from that institution means, and the flow through is we want an embedded approach, it's pervasive across the curriculum, everybody who's involved in supporting learning and teaching buys into that, our quality system therefore is like everything else, integral to that model, and resources flow to support it. So there are many agents in that sort of system. And to my mind, that's the only one that can be totally inclusive, because it's a compulsory model. Everybody's in the game, as it were. The second one is an institutional vision, which says we still really value these things in our graduates, but it's an add-on and marginal activity, because we're not going to insist that it goes across all areas of the curriculum. We will find and locate it in certain sort of champion organisations like careers, and there'll be limited resources, and we design our system then and our quality system accordingly, which means it can't be inclusive no matter what we say about it. It's open, but actually we don't want it to be totally inclusive because we couldn't cope. So I think that's the model in many institutions, and it relies an awful lot on goodwill and incredible hard work from the relatively few people who are involved in that. And then the third view is a champion's vision, and I would say that's our institution, where we are trying to influence the thinking of our institution by saying these are the things that are really valuable to our graduates, and eventually can we bang the heads together at the top and say, yeah, this is, we want this as a Surrey vision, top and everywhere, not just the top. So, and then people have to be really resourceful in that situation to find the resources, and they design an educational design, and it may not be the one that we want, but it's the one that we can resource, and part of that is the quality of design. And so you see what I mean, it's the design of the system is according to the resource you have and the support you have in that system. And I think that those latter models also require us to be resourceful in the way we make standards. And I'm using that rather than quality assurance, but the way we create processes out of which we feel good standards, which are good enough, flow. And so it's, to me, they're all sort of connected and interconnected, and we'd have to look in terms of different systems, horses for courses, I think is the way of expressing. Does that make sense? I mean, if you think there are other ways of visualising that, then let's sort of surface it.
Yes, I'm a bit new to all this, and my question may be naive, but if we're putting the designs in curriculum so that they are completely inclusive and we fulfil the outcomes that are already stated in all our course documentation, are we not going to be trumped on student recruitment and employer engagement by anybody that offers a certificate that they can wave outside the core qualification? So we've got to do it, led by own people doing it.
Yes, so we stop everybody else doing it. get away. We don't have any resources.
What I'm saying is the golden ideal of in curriculum is not actually realistic in the marketplace. Mm.
Hello, reaction.
Well, just sort of feeling from what Seb was saying, I've been in names, I come from Wales, from Dundee, so hangover people are. Just from what you're saying and what you're saying, the kind of fit together is that nowadays most students are coming to university not for an educational experience, they're not coming here to become academics, they're coming here for, well, in Scotland it's 4 years, for the experience of the university and for the degree that you get, because it means that you're not immediately deselected when you're trying to apply for jobs. So that's the actual, and that's why I think that the approach that you get to taking is the one that's interesting, because we need, I think, to probably be tailoring courses in general to be more explicitly, you come here and you will leave here with this. We've really got to say, as universities, we're just talking about individual university, as the entire sector, to be able to say, we're training people who are going to be able to do this. Now, it's okay, because I'm still able to study the Russian Revolution and Civil War, but in the middle of that, I'm going to be doing various things that involve me being involved, the things I'm going to be using if I want to apply to Standard Life or HSBC. So that's what I think we need to be kind of apprehensive. The thing about the award is that I do find it quite a problem now that in Scotland, we are one of the only ones who currently do an award. We've had our pilot year this year, and again, I've been pressured on the first year. It's meant to be something that you grow over, but they said, right, well, we're on a minimum of 20 people to be doing it after the first year. Counterintuitive. But what we need to be saying is that if everybody's coming out with these things, then it's just another way of saying, right, well, brilliant, nice, you've not got a 2-1 rating, that's you out. You've got a 2-1, but you don't have a certificate, that's you out. And then after that, we've got back to the situation where we're in, where we're trying to come up with new ways of making our students employable. And that's really so. After we've done degrees, which are meant to have been to a similar level, and after we've done awards, which will no doubt end up being to a similar level because we're all going to talk to the same businesses and the same groups who are going to give us the same advice, then we're going to be stuck with a position where we've got nowhere else to go. We've just got the universities who are doing exactly the same thing.
Well, can I just have a little comment about that? And that is that actually most graduates won't be working for these big firms. Most graduates, a lot of graduates will be working for SMEs or in the third sector or in the public sector. And I think there are a whole range of skills in those areas that actually, quite apart from the professional groups with their vocational degrees, there are a whole lot of people who are going to be working in public sector admin at all sorts of levels. And those people may need rather different skills from the people who are selling financial products at the highest level.
I think I should probably bear that in mind. Obviously, from just outside Edinburgh, we've got most of quite focused on your work,
Given that sort of diversity of potential employment that the graduates across the country might be heading for, and bearing in mind this challenge of transferability to different contexts, I mean, has anybody got any observations about how that could be taken into account in the standards that are considered desirable to attain in the course of any award program, co-curricular program, how would we describe it?
I think in general for a small business or a large business, they still want the same things from people who are coming out with a graduate degree. We want people to be able to demonstrate leadership skills, communication skills, decision-making skills. And whether it's a small or medium-sized business or whether it's a huge conglomerate straight across the oceans, they don't really mind as long as you're able to somebody, because they'll train you what they need you to do once you're there. But it's important to get these initial skills. I think it's having talked to the local employers in our area and talked to some of the bigger employers, what they're looking for is broadly the same stuff. They want us to be the same path as the graduates. They want us to be able to go in, and then I think it was one of them, the guy who works for an engineering firm, and he said, I want to be able to point him to the toilet, I'm sure I'm going to make a cup of coffee. And that should be the only sort of thing I need to do on the first day, because I know that if I give them something, they're going to be able to sit down and write me a report. And I just need to train them in the nuances of what we do, how we do things variously here. And he kind of said that I think that's an attitude that I've been getting from quite a lot of people when I've been talking to them and trying to get them interested in sponsoring our award, backing it up, putting it in.
Yeah, I think the standards are embodied in the students themselves. You couldn't help but be impressed by the students that in the panel yesterday and their ability to articulate their understanding of themselves. And it's their ability to do that and relate to what employer wants and the information in the way they want the information given to them. That is where the transferability occurs. And it's no amount of awards and papers and certificates will do that. It's their capability as an individual to convince someone else that I've got what you want.
So do you think that this would overcome this perceived deficit in transferability of skills? Are you tapping into maybe something that Dave Snowden was advocating, the interpretation, self-interpretation of one's own narrative? Is that what we're...
Well, it's about relating your narrative to what other people want, if that's the process you're involved in, persuading someone else that you have what they're looking for.
But I'm picking up on points that I think you've made, and your point about the difficulty of offering those opportunities to people in a shorter time, let's say, than constrained by circumstances, and Mark's point about what is it that's missing. You know, I mean, they can't actually articulate those things. It's, the challenge really is, I think, is I mean, it's all fine when students can do it, it's when they can't do it. How do we put those processes in place? Coming back to that question about process. That helps everybody, or maybe successful, to move forward with that. And progress through more difficult.
And whose responsibility is it? Is it institutionally, is it our responsibility?
Well,
is it the students' responsibility? Is this a partnership? Is it a core team?
And will it be so for students anyway now? And it is very over intensive.
Yeah.
I mean, if we bring the right set, we just
did you? I was just going to say that the value of an award is about giving students the time and the space to practice that skill of transferability, either through workshops or setting them some sort of reflective task, whatever the assessment or line sort of application flaw might be. It's facilitating that self-reflection, self-understanding, integrative processes. And actually the practice, it's something that needs to be practiced, that articulation which helps them perform better in selection processes. And sitting them down in a workshop and getting engineering students, for example, to actually talk to each other and ask themselves some difficult questions about what they felt or how they dealt with a critical incident in their part-time job, they actually do learn something from that, and it really helps them. And I focus very much on this question in selection, you know, tell me about yourself. And I tried this out with some academics at our learning conference last year and phrased it in a slightly different way, which was something about what is the special contribution you make to your department. So I faced them with this question, no preparation, put on the spot. And they couldn't do it, and even I couldn't do it. It's such a difficult question to answer. And so students need to have time and space to practice that.
Okay, I think Mark wants to send Terry.
I absolutely agree with that, but what worries me is that the students are already, a lot of students are already time poor. They have commitments to families, they have jobs that they need in order to pay the bills, in order to stay at the university. We need to think very carefully, I think, about what we do in these activities that doesn't actually take more of their time away. So ways in which we can draw that out, I would argue, is part of the curriculum, because that's part of what we should be doing anyway, not putting extra burden on students.
I was just
going to
say, I absolutely agree.
Terry,
thank you. I also wanted to agree. Back to Norman's point, absolutely spot on. Just a small example of it's very important to give people the time and the space to actually engage and a little bit of selfish activity, thinking about themselves and development and reflection. And all of our sabbaticals in our student union, big student union, are engaged on the West certificate. They're our champions, they're leading from the front. And they're superb. And of course, representatives are going to be connected to the process, all sorts of things. And I take your comments about the course report, often aren't the people you most perhaps would like to reach. But one of the academic vice presidents is a very incredibly able, confident person, attended a 2-day boot camp to actually just introduce some of these concepts. And the feedback she provided was brilliant. And it was really a message about it. She was saying, look,
Well, I was in two minds about this. I'm pretty confident, very articulate. I think I can do things really well. I represent myself well. Pretty confident operator. And so she had doubts about boot camp. The difference that boot camp said to her, the difference it made to her was that it was about how she could use all of what she thought she had. It kind of confirmed she did have some of those things. But it introduced her to the tactical approaches that she would need to navigate the complexity of the processes ahead of her and to play the game and to make the claims and then substantiate the claims and perform well when you're put into a group and you've got the selection centre microscope upon you and all that. And she was, it was very interesting because it just all kind of brought that into sharp focus. And it, I just thought that was quite an interesting statement she made about the tactics. So the comment about weapons of mass destruction. It is what employers are engaging in. Yeah. Over 47% of all the big AGR managers, Carl's members, are now using telephone screening as standard. But there's multiple screens. And it's about articulation confidence at that point. Being prepared for it and practicing it. The number of students who, number of recruiters I've talked to who say, we planned this with friends students, yet they were talking to us and they were on the bus. Or they were in a noisy bubble. Or didn't they think, you may not think that. You may not think it's just required you either. Very basic.
To answer the accessibility question, we've been astonished. Our virtual online gap analysis interview, whatever you want to call it, has been accessed at 3 a.m. As a mature learner myself, when I came into education in the 30s, that's when I was doing my studies after the kids had gone to bed. And that's the student, because we really thought about that because we're 60% we were shocked the other week to find out 60% of our students get the automatic virtual because they're below the learning earnings limit and they fit all the criteria. And the online, I think the only way we're going to be able to do this with the mass numbers we've got in higher education is to move into their world and as a learner. Even now as a learner, my world is after I've worked. I've done my day at work, I go home and study. I'm doing it at 10 at night, I'm doing it at midnight, and I'm online.
We had our doubts about that approach. So the initial gap analysis for self-organisations making things happen, these are virtual Q&A. And would digital natives, older and younger, take to it? The fact is that they love it.
Do you want to study in this?
They're absolutely comfortable with it. And we have a virtual avatar tutor. Because at 2 a.m. in the morning, we're not around to answer questions. So for every question, you can click on her or click on him, depending on your preferences to tutors, and they will come up and explain the question and provide more context so you can move on your own. Other places will be doing it, but it's working with us at the moment, and they are 2, 3, 4, 5 a.m. in the morning.
Sorry to interrupt Terry there, but as a person coming into as a non-standard traditional learner, you haven't got a choice about being digital. You're in this university, you're expecting me to do research, you're expecting to do, so it's not, if you don't know, when I taught PGCE for mature people coming to PGCE for the last couple of years, and the first thing we had to do was to get the older ones, the ones between the age of 26 to 35, who had left school before computers became an everyday occurrence, who had worked for 10, 15 years, get them up to digital, digital IT literate, submitting your essays, doing your press preparation online. You haven't got a choice, have we? We're not. Do you know of any university course we can go through and not use computers?
I do think engagement is really key in engaging equity and accessibility. We've worked so hard to make what we're offering accessible and hopefully attractive and meaningful and relevant in so, so many different ways. And it's cost us a lot of money to try and do that. And academics are at the very centre of it. But I'd much rather not rely on academics for all sorts of reasons I could go into. And what we're waiting for, and we're starting to see it now, is the bottom-up effect, where you've got students talking to students in shared houses saying, where have you been? I've been to that graduate. Was it any good? That's really good. And so the numbers are now not hundreds but thousands, and that's what we're hoping for, that effect, rather than relying on academics.
That's a few things to keep in mind. I think that's quite interesting. Really important to human being.
It's a woman, it's not an alien.
I think some of the things is that one of the things that I became more aware of once I'd actually graduated was that we do, and I imagine this is true for all other institutions, do quite a lot of employability things. Just they don't tell students sometimes. So when they get to a situation where they've been given a, when they embarked upon a period of self-reflection, well, for the entire of my third and fourth year, I got to moan about the fact that I had to do a course, a module journal, so every week you had to fill in a 500-word piece about what you'd learned that week, what research you'd done, how you'd gone through it, what you learned from that, with a conclusion about how you felt you'd learned. So you're going through personal reflection. But it was only later on I linked up the two and realised that I was actually doing something that that recruiters were looking for, that you go through the person. But nobody told me, by the way, that's going to be excellent for when you actually come along, you'll be able to use an example of that. And it's also the thing of presentations. Most people accept presentations as part of their course, right? But they moan about it because they don't like standing up in front of people. But they don't get told that what you're going to be doing one of these if you want a job anywhere. So I think sometimes there'll be actually the higher education sector in general does things well. We don't tell the people we're meant to tell, but we are actually doing things well.
I think we're picking up a message from you generally about being more explicit about what you're trying to do, how you plan to go about doing it, and where it could lead to.
It comes from lack of time.
Bring them in on.
The lack of time that we have as students, and like I said, I work 30 hours a week, nights, working in the student union. And then you've got, when you're meant to put in something like, well, I can't remember how many hours of work we do studying. Once you've fitted that together, then all of a sudden, I think you probably entitled to some sort of time to yourself to be able to go and do something. Given that weekends now, I think, where you work for students, and if you don't have a class on a Thursday, then you know that that's a day that you can do a day shift. It needs to be more explicit, because people don't have the time to